The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
We got one of my favorite guests in the studio. Ben Greenfield is in town. Super pumped to have him here.
Cool. He's one of your favorite guests?
Yes. I love Ben.
Ben is probably one of the smartest dudes I've ever met.
Hence why he's one of my favorite guests.
Yeah,
every time he comes, I feel like I learn something.
He's like Captain Knowledge Bomb.
Yeah, he knows a lot of shit. he's like a fitness eccentric dude, you know what I mean? And he walks the walk. That's the thing.
Well, he embodies it.
He literally does everything he talks about.
Yeah,
all of it at the same time.
So yeah, which is awesome. You need people like that.
Before we formally introduce him on here, I think I've had quite a few people that were like, you know, you guys are like kind of anti pseudoscience, and he's kind of like the king of pseudoscience. And I'm like, you know what though? If there's anybody who's going to be testing and pushing and biohacking, like, he's the guy. Yeah. Like,
he lives it. Yeah. We've been to his house. The dude, he came into our studio to record this episode that you're about to listen to. And put on, I'm not joking, he put on like this electrode.
He looked like he was like helmet in Tron. Thing,
and then he put something up his nose.
I did post it.
Yeah, Justin posted
it. He put something up his nose and it's shooting like laser beams. And
he'll
photons
do that in public. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, he did.
He doesn't give a fuck.
Oh, he wears Jesus sandals to dinner the other day. Yeah. The ones with the copper that they ground into the ground.
Yeah, the copper in so it grounds
him. I love it.
He does everything though. And let's be honest though. He starts with taking care of his body.
Oh, he's got everything dialed.
Yeah, he's done all the big things first. When I get annoyed by the pseudoscience people is when you have somebody doing like if he was wearing these copper shoes to stay grounded, right?
And he's eating donuts.
Yeah, but he rolls up with McDonald's and he's, you know what I'm saying? And he's like doing drugs and he's not working out and he's like, you know what I'm saying? Like that's the stuff that annoys me is when people are like so involved. They're not doing the big pieces that are going to make
him. No, he does everything.
Yes.
Like literally everything and then everything else.
Which makes him a great person to listen to his experience when he introduces some of these things, because I feel like if there's ever somebody I can ask, like, hey, man, when you introduced, you know, like the Wim Hof method, right, and started doing like the hot, cold thing.
Yeah,
like,
he'd give you a very descriptive.
Yes. Like, tell me what a difference that made in your life. Or, hey, when you started sticking the laser up your nose and or listening to binary beats before you went to sleep, like, what a difference did that make? Like, he's a perfect, like, somebody else tells me that. I'm like, well, how do you know that had nothing to do with the stress, your stress levels, your poor sleep or the shitty food you ate yesterday?
Right.
Like, you're so out of whack everywhere else. Mm-hmm. But that dude is dialed everywhere.
No, he's dialed. He's
that's the word.
He's also a podcast veteran. I think his podcast was a Ben Greenfield Fitness. It's been on the air for maybe
like
10 years. Ten years. So, which makes him ancient in the podcast world.
Like Apple IIe.
He consumes information like a black hole. He's just a voracious appetite for learning. Great guy to hang out with and talk to. He's a fitness, like I said, a fitness expert. You can find him online at beyondtrainingbook.com or Ben Greenfield Fitness. .com and his podcast is called Ben Greenfield Fitness. So without any further ado, here we are interviewing the great Ben Greenfield.
The man.
Benny and the Jets. Damn.
Benny.
Benny and the Jets.
Oh, fuck.
Finally, somebody can sing with me.
Together, the spotlight's hidden some.
Damn.
Change the weather.
We're going to have you sit.
Kill the fatted calf tonight, so stick around.
Oh, yeah. It's
going to be electric music, solid walls of sound.
Woo.
I can't even hang with that.
No, not at all.
I haven't seen him yet.
That's good.
Whoa, but
that's good. Stay home. You won't stop now. That was great.
Yeah, we're going to have to edit that. I'm going to lose my job, dude. He's in my seat over there fucking singing that good, man.
He just took my job.
Adam, listen.
I'm in your seat, too.
If it was as easy as...
Am I supposed to be in that seat?
Yeah.
No. We wanted you to sit right there. If it was as easy as singing better than you, Adam, you would have been gone a long time ago. There's a lot more value to what you bring.
That's an easy spot.
I feel really insecure, though, now. Fucking it. You guys have been trying to get me to get like that and respond, and he just right on cue.
I love it, man. You know, you fit right in.
Yeah, right in.
Yeah, that's why I grew a beard.
Hey, you know what? Can we talk about your beard for a second? It looks fucking awesome. I don't know. Don't shave it.
Thank you.
Yeah, leave it.
It's like you got beard, extra manly off
beard
all of a sudden.
Oil.
Yeah. Are you putting beard oil in it?
I put, speaking of promoting product, I put the Greenfield anti-aging skin serum on it every day.
It actually is.
It's like a whole bunch of different essential oils. It's like oregano and jojoba and, you know, all these things, but it's been
smells
shown
like you,
to,
you rubbed
to
your beard
with,
in a pizza.
Yeah, it kind of does smell like I rubbed my beard in a pizza.
Well, tell me a little bit about this because, you know, I've...
So it smells delicious.
And blue spruce oil, which actually, the idea behind blue spruce oil used in like Eastern medicine and essential oil practices are that it increases like confidence and boldness and testosterone. So it makes you smell like a pine forest a little bit, too.
Wow.
Which, if you come over here and smell them.
That's your...
That.
No, I...
Snozzle up the back of my neck.
No, I think you might have too much testosterone.
It's like brawny. Yeah.
We need to reduce it a little
blue
bit.
Blue spruce.
I'm going to give you my flannel. It'll be a complete look.
But what else?
I put that in it, and that's it.
What else are you here for? I know you had a full plate while you were here. What else you got going on?
I'm on my way down to San Diego to speak at the Unbeatable Mind Summit.
Oh, awesome.
With... former U.S. Navy SEAL Commander Mark Devine.
Mm.
And, explain what that is. So, I mean,
I just like to call him former U.S. Navy SEAL Commander. No, ex U.S. Navy SEAL Commander.
I don't know if you're ever an ex.
Yeah. Anyways, badass.
Yeah.
It's a conference that is geared around this idea that you should train your mind just as much as you train your body. And U.S. CrossFit in Encinitas and Mark Devine's whole organization called SEAL Fit is based around this concept that you do everything from holotropic breath work to box breathing to what they call warrior yoga to a lot of mental prep work in addition to workouts that just completely crush you.
And this is for everyday people?
Yeah. They have programs for everyday people. And like I'll lead one of their workouts. So I'm like one of their SEAL Fit certified coaches or whatever, because I've done their you know, Navy SEAL Hell Week for civilians, and they have another thing called a 20X, like a 12-hour training beat down, and they have an academy where you go and just
feed
through the fire hose there in Encinitas for 5-6 days.
And that's part of the certification or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But the idea is that, you know, for example, mm-hmm. you know, a typical SEAL Fit workout, and a lot of Navy SEALs are doing this to train for buds, like you'll have movement prep. Right, which is honestly, like when I showed up at Mark Devine's Academy and did movement prep with him, we were out on what they call the grinder for like an hour doing everything from bird dogs to clam shells to jumping jacks to backwards bear, like, you know, just getting worked. And after like an hour of that, he was like, all right, let's start the workout.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you have movement prep and then you go into strength. So they do, you know, strength will just be a typical 5x5 or, you know, whatever, typically a few complexes. And then they go into Metcon where you've got like anywhere from a 10 to a 30 minute AMRAP. And then after that, you go into endurance where you've got 30 to 60 minutes of low level endurance. And that's the workout.
Wow.
So, it just go like a typical workout will take two and a half hours to get through.
Wow. So you have to, they teach you how to train people or whatever, their method. And then on top of that, they're like, but you also got to pass these tests.
Yeah. Yeah. And the SEAL Fit, I did their program called 8 weeks to SEAL Fit. I wound up doubling it and doing it for 16 weeks to get ready for their hell week. It's called Kokoro, where you show up and they basically treat you you don't get a boat or a gun because they can't give civilians the boats or the guns, but everything else, like the deep water torture and the cold and, you know, getting the sand cooking in the sand and doing 26-mile night hikes and all this jazz. Like
people are just signing up for
the
shit.
But yeah, like the workouts were so tough. But what I would do is I would take a typical workout and I would do like half of it in the morning, half of it in the evening, because I couldn't even do the full workout all at once.
Wow.
Best shape I've ever been in my life, though.
Really?
People pay to come do this.
People pay to come do it.
What do they pay to come do that?
I don't know. But honestly, when I finish,
I love whenever I ask him money details, he never fucking knows. I think there's been like five different times when we've asked him something. He's like, I have no idea.
We can get back to that. Actually, there's a reason for that. The idea is that what were we talking about before you just completely derailed me?
He does that to me all the time.
So like I finished doing the Kokoro. And after I slept like 16 hours, I crashed on somebody's couch, just passed out, woke up, got on the plane to go home. But walking through the airport, you just feel like a god among men after doing something like that. It's like, you look at other people who are sitting there complaining about the fact that they got the 16-ounce instead of the 12-ounce Frappuccino, and you're just like, you have no fucking clue what I just went through.
Life is so easy for you.
Yeah, I know, but it puts everything in perspective. Like, things seem easy after that.
Of course. I think Adam wanted to know the cost because he's probably thinking, well, fuck, guys, we can put some crazy shit together. I know exactly what you think.
No,
I'm going to line everybody up and just kick him in the nuts.
We did one at my house. We did. I had Mark Devine and some of their U.S. CrossFit and SEALFIT guys come up to the house, and we had 25 people go through what they call a 20X, which is like a baby version of that, but it's still pretty tough. It's a 12-hour beatdown. And I mean, you talk about programming, like part of it is not complex physical programming as much as like a brain fuck.
Of course.
At one point, I just had people put 50-pound sandbags in their backpack, and we walked for 19 miles just up the road and back. And half the people were just dead after, just walking.
Did anybody drop out?
Blisters and foot care. Yeah. Yeah, but you always get people dropping out of those things.
Damn.
Yeah.
Forget that, man.
So I want to revisit when I interrupted you and derailed you. Because I have noticed this about you, and I've asked like a couple different, even about your, even some of your own business. Like, I feel you really disconnect yourself with the financial part of a lot of things you have to deal with. Explain that.
Well, first of all, it can suck the enjoyment out of things in life when you're analyzing how much you spent on a particular activity, whether that activity is a flight or a movie or a meal or... You know, even something like what was it that you had just asked me about?
The training you did, like
a conference, like education.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the most successful people I know will sign up for conferences, seminars, educational experiences that will cost tens of thousands of dollars. You know, they'll spend $30,000 to $60,000 a year just on educating themselves, and they're successful because they're constantly learning. And constantly not just learning, but also networking at events like this. Mm-hmm. And so for me to analyze cost of a lot of those activities, particularly like education, conference, seminar, stuff like that, I will get an invite to something. And if I look at who's there and who invited
me, like, hell yes,
I will forward that to my assistant who manages all my cards, my bank accounts, everything, and just tell her, sign me up for this one. And in many cases,
I just won't
look at the price tag.
Well, they do say that in terms of return on investment, one of the best returns on investment is just educating yourself.
Have you gone and done George?
Which is crazy, because I'll stand at the grocery store for like 15 minutes trying to figure out which of the oatmeal brands is like 79 cents cheaper. So, or which kombucha is $3.99 today instead of $4.99, you know? So yeah, I'm super duper.
We're fascinating creatures with stuff like that. Have you done Jordan's business? We talked to him last night.
Have you gone through his academy?
Go to LA and learn how to seduce women.
Yeah.
he hates it when I because that's not what it's about.
It's
about being charming, right? Like whether it's in business or relationships or life or whatever. I haven't gone down and done it. My brother's done it. My brother Zach has gone down there and done it.
Really?
He spoke pretty highly of it. Yeah, but no, I was just born charming.
It was El Natural.
You don't want to become more too charming.
Seeps off me with all that blue spruce oil.
You keep singing like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man.
That was hot.
Yeah.
We got questions. We wanted to answer.
Yeah, we're gonna do something a little bit different. Like
we're in a room just full of whiteboards, jam packed with questions.
Yeah.
Well, I really wanted to do this because all of us have a lot of respect for Ben as far as his knowledge in fitness. I mean, it's rare that I feel
he's one of the smartest people.
Yeah.
I've ever
typically we wouldn't even allow
because I shine laser lights on my balls in my head.
He's crazy.
By the way, he didn't make
that's
that
the secret.
Yeah. I got to make sure everybody knows. Literally, before we started recording,
we got pictures.
We got pictures. He put on it. So, if you remember the movie Back to the Future, when Michael J. Fox was back in time, and then the scientist dude opens the door and he's got that big ass thing on his head.
Great Scott!
Yeah, and he's like trying to read his mind. It looked like that on his head with a something up his nose.
I'm sure
laser
Doug,
beams.
Doug will post it.
No,
it's
about 810 nanometer wavelength of light, and it was developed originally for neurological decline and for Alzheimer's patients because it acts on the mitochondria in neural tissue. So you have a component of your mitochondria called cytochrome C oxidase. It upregulates activity of that, so you generate more ATP in your brain. The other thing that it produces when you shine that specific spectrum of light is nitric oxide. And nitric oxide can actually cross the blood-brain barrier and wind up in other tissues of the body aside from just the brain. So you get increased blood flow, increased nitric oxide production, alpha brainwave production. They have, if you go to YouTube, you can find a full EEG analysis where they look at the actual brainwave production and changes in brainwave states when you put a laser on the brain. And it's been shown to increase alpha brainwave production as well.
Do you think that they'll be using stuff like that?
Interesting.
Because it's pretty fringe, right? You don't see many people, you know, using it. It's not accepted by mainstream.
I mean,
yet.
I'd wear it in public for sure.
I see it completely disrupting things like Alzheimer's treatment.
Really?
Now, Alzheimer's treatment is multifactorial, right? There are all sorts of things from ketosis to infrared to different nootropics like, you know, huperzine, for example. Yeah.
Well, they think it's a glucose issue. They think it's like diabetes, almost like type 3 diabetes, I've heard some scientists call it.
That's a big part of it, too, the amyloid plaques that can form as a result of glycation in neural tissue. But there was a very interesting, it was 3 or 4 years ago, a case study with 12 individuals that they put through a very comprehensive program to reverse neurological decline that accompanies Alzheimer's. And it really was everything in the kitchen sink. I mean, they had, you know, the laser lights, and they had all the different herbs and supplements. They were in ketosis. They were pulling out all the stops. And as you guys know, you know, like if I hurt my shoulder, I'm not just going to slap ice on it. Usually for me, it's like topical magnesium, ice, electrostim, deep tissue work, retraining of the muscle, like all these things that you throw at an issue.
They work,
you
know, better together, too.
The shotgun
typically.
Approach, yeah. So, you know, coming full circle, the idea behind, you know, something like that, like shining the lights on the head, you know, it stems from Alzheimer's research, but it's really interesting how it can help with not just staving off neurological decline, but helping with neurological function.
This reminds me a little bit of what you – last night you said to me at dinner, and I bet we will see, and we'll probably start seeing things like this with, like, your professional sports teams. And I thought it was a really good tip that you gave – last night when we were having dinner, you mentioned, like, you know, one of the ways I've recommended chiropractors in the past is, you know, go seek out the professional who's got the local sport team or whatever they're helping,
because
right. they're probably on the...
Exactly. Whichever professional sports team or whichever chiropractic physician works with a local professional sports team, that's typically the guy that you want to see who's not going to be the guy or the girl who has that cheesy little gun thing. My apologies to the chiropractic docs, the clicker, which has never worked for me, or like the little body scanner that you stand next to and then the computer spits out the $300 worth of supplements you're supposed to go to the front counter and buy.
And it's like the Scientology.
I mean, when I go to the chiropractic doc, like I want freaking like ART. I want my sacroiliac joint adjusted. I want traction. You know, I want the neck popping thing just because it feels so damn good. So you look for the person who works with the local professional sports team.
No, I think that was great.
Unless everybody on the local pro sports team looks like they're, I don't know.
Out of whack.
Yeah, like out of whack. Kind of walking crooked and dragging one leg behind them. Like,
no, well, they're in the, I mean, and sports has evolved so much with things like that they're in the business of, you know, how do we keep these athletes healthy for this entire season? So,
and there's a lot of money that goes into keeping them healthy.
You have a lot of money, and, and I love seeing it now because what we see, and a lot of people don't realize a lot of the evolution. A lot of people think a lot of people used to blame steroids and things like that. But a lot of this is the science, how much we've evolved with being able to repair the body and take care of it, why we see some of these super athletes. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, somatotypes and understanding like what body or what bodies are best for what sports. And that has a big role. But a lot has to do with that, too. Like you see, I remember when the championship game last year with the Cavs, and they were showing LeBron's, like, his whole breakdown. I was like, oh shit, this guy's using cryo. He's doing like, he's doing like all the right things for like maximum recovery. And like, there's definitely teams that have got the guys on there that are putting them through.
Well, when you've
he's jumping on the rebounding trampoline with the training mask on. Barefoot and grounding shoes.
Perfect. Excellent. Shall we do the first question?
Dude, read it away, Sal.
All right. So one of our forum members, one of our buddies, Zach Harding, wants to know, why is it that the fitness industry seems to have the most amount of myths and lies floating around with gurus promoting their products with pseudoscience backing up their claims. So I guess in short, why does the fitness industry seem to be just inundated with so much crap?
In my opinion?
Yeah. I mean, this we can all go around.
Yeah, we'll all go around. But yeah, let's fire off with you first.
Well, by being into fitness, generally that means that you, for some reason, have high aspirations for your body or for your mind. In many cases, you have like a deep curiosity about ways that you could make yourself better. And in many cases, you are grasping at straws to live longer, to not lose your six pack, to, you know, to always have your boobs staying perky. And folks get desperate to do, you know, just about anything that they possibly can do to not lose their fitness or to build their fitness, or, you know, for the skinny high school kids to look bigger when they flex in front of the mirror, or for, you know, the girls to look good in their swimsuit. And it's very, very easy for fitness professionals to prey on that and make claims, as, you know, folks have done since snake oil times, to really prey on people's fear.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just fitness is so motivated by our insecurities, and I think that's kind of along the lines of what you're saying, that when people go to, when they're buying something based on that type of emotion, it's easy to prey on it. And it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? The consumer demands it, so the producers produce what you want to hear, which is, you know, get in shape in 30 days, lose weight real fast. You know, this is going to give you all the results that you ever wanted with no work. You know, this pill is going to, you know, do everything for you. And then on top of it, so much of it is subjective. This is why snake oil is the original bullshit supplement. I mean, there were literally men that would drive around town to town selling, you know, these remedies for cough, or, you know, this will make you feel younger or whatever. And there's that whole placebo effect. You know, and people buy things and they take them. They're like, "Oh, I think I feel it. This feels better." And it's a hard cycle to break. You know.
Yeah, but I mean, look at other industries too. Look at the financial industry, right? Like that's got lots of fraud and promises that things are going to grow at, you know, 6, 9, 12% when they're growing at -3%, or, you know, people who are essentially just laundering money. You look at, you know, the entertainment industry and the fact that most reality TV shows are fake and manipulated and not really what you're seeing. And like every single industry, what you have to do is dig through the crap. And in many cases, you need to realize that there is no one perfect diet, and there is no one perfect exercise, and there's no one perfect supplement. And if somebody has, like, whatever, low luteinizing hormone production, and their hypogonadism or low libido is due to that, and a supplement that assists with luteinizing hormone production, like, say,
Tribulus,
you
know,
like Bulbine or Tribulus or something, helps them. That doesn't then mean that if you go out and buy it, it's going to turn you into a sex god, because maybe you make luteinizing hormone just fine, but you have poor circulation to your gonads or something like that. So, I mean, you know, you always have to analyze things.
You twist them real hard.
Actually works for you. Yeah.
Well, I like that you, you
your
know,
pants are too tight.
I think that's true. It's not just the fitness industry. I think almost every industry is corrupt. And I think...
Well, I think it's the ones really driven by ego. He talked finance, entertainment, fitness. These are all people like, oh, you know, I'm insecure about something. Let me give you, you know.
Well, and I guess that's another thing that would make it really difficult for somebody who's in fitness is we have all this, you know, data or people before us, I guess you could say, that have gone and kind of paved the way. And this is kind of the formula, right? I remember when we first got going and we talked about, like, man, the hardest thing for us was really the formula was build up a network of people. However you do that, whether you're pretty and you do it, you're smart and you do it, you're entertaining and do it, whatever, you build up a network of people. Once you have enough people, you sell them a product, and whatever that product is, it didn't matter. It mattered getting the network of people. Then whatever product came along that was willing to be the first one to take a chance. That's kind of the formula that so many of these guys kind of fall victim to. And part of it is the whole system, right? It's like it just continues to promote that because it's how everybody makes money. So to come out, to step outside of that is, I think it's really challenging. And I also think, like, I know who Zach is, and, you know, some of these guys are some of our hardcore mind pump people that have been from the beginning. And I know we came out really strong and hard at the very beginning and started, you know, prodding and picking fights with people. And so we still have some of our hardcore people like that, like, literally, like, just, I feel like, want us to smash everybody. And I'm like, well, no, that was never the message of Mind Pump. We kind of want to be a filter. And like kind of what Ben was saying, we're not trying to say there's a one way of this and these people are wrong and these people are bad. No, it's like we're trying to help teach people on how to filter it themselves and understand that process and what that looks like. And, you know, some and
just be better informed overall.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. It's like, you know, information was a lot harder to access as far as like proper information, you know, unless you were going to school for these very specific topics. It's like you kind of relied on the guy that looked the best in the gym. And so, you know, you, a lot of times, you know, it was either hormones or something else that was contributing to their results. But even then, it didn't apply there. The way that they trained didn't apply to that person that was asking them. So.
Yeah. That, I mean, you could extend that to bodybuilding forums, too, right? Like,
yeah.
There are a host of N equal one case studies on bodybuilding forums with everybody on their specific cycles. And this is exactly what you need to do because this is what worked for me. And yeah, you have to cut through the crap. You know, one industry, though, that I would say probably has zero fraud, is completely clean, is the clothing industry. Because I've spent a lot of time in Thailand, and the number of real authentic Gucci bags and Nike shoes that you find there on the beaches, it's right, flabbergasting. Right, like, right.
Really?
How that quality persists worldwide with zero fraudulent products whatsoever. It's crazy. So the clothing industry is still clean, thank God, at least from what I've seen in Asia.
Oh, shit.
God damn. No, I'm, yeah.
The bottom didn't fall out my Gucci bag, so it must be real.
It looks the same. Who cares?
No, what another great
don't
point,
rub it
though.
Too hard.
They all are. It really is. And I think I think the training
Folklies.
Why people are so passionate about it, because it's like it's you, it's your body, it's something like that. So you feel so like angry when you got suckered, right?
Yeah,
when you bought that thing that you thought was going to change you, and you're like, fuck, you know, I spent all my summer savings on that and it was a gimmick and I had no idea.
Yeah, but there's also the information that comes out that supports, you know, eating a certain way or working out a certain way, or when you, it can counter itself all the time. Things tend to, they look like they change, you know. One minute it's not good for eating too much fat. Now the next minute, oh, wait a minute, fat's not the enemy. I thought, and what about cholesterol? Now they're changing their mind on that. And sodium, what about that? And, you know, I thought I was supposed to work out and just beat myself up. No pain, no gain. Now you're telling me that, you know, I can train differently. And there's just, I mean, it's an industry that's just full of information that counters, that it's against itself.
Well, it's not a hard science, right? So so if you look at really like we're a meat sack, right? And you know, technically we might be a little bit more than that, but we're a glorified meat sack.
Full of bacteria.
There's a whole bunch of stuff floating around inside of us, and it actually isn't as clean cut as say like the publishing industry or the financing industry or any of these industries where things are specific and measurable. When my accountant looks at the monthly P&L statement for my business, those numbers aren't lying. They're hard reflections of exactly what occurred. But when you're looking at the human body and you're looking at soft science, there are so many confounding variables that sure, you could say it's pseudoscience, but it's also just soft science. It's not hard science. I mean, physiology and biochemistry, and you could even argue to a certain extent, you know, biomechanics are really soft sciences.
Now, when you're, because you're somebody who is, I feel like, always flirting with those boundaries, and I know you've been said that before, and I have a feeling that's why Zach even brought up the pseudoscience thing. And I whenever I talk about you, I explain to people, like, you're a perfect example of someone I love to see test all those things, because I believe you really walk the walk and you are always searching for biohacks and things to improve your life, versus somebody who is latching on to the next newest gimmicky thing, and yet the rest of his health and fitness is so out of balance and fucked up. It's like you're eating like shit, you're doing processed foods, you're not working out, you're not sleeping correctly, you have all this stress, you're doing drugs, but then you got this thing on your head with a laser up your nose. I would be like, come on, you're a crock of shit. Like, get out of here. Like, fix all these other things first. But I really believe that you do all the other pieces, and you really are like applying these things and saying, like, man, is this really worth, you know, is it worth the money? Is it worth the time that I do all this and apply that? So I think it's really the motive, the person. And I feel like you educate your listeners and you explain about it, the science behind it. And it's,
yeah, well, the world needs guinea pigs. That's what I told my mom that I wanted to be when I grew up. I was going to be the president or just a guinea pig. Just do relentless self-experimentation on myself.
Yeah.
See if any parasites come out the eyeballs or a ball falls off. Yeah.
Excellent. Stay away from
Richard Gere. I'm still in one piece. It's actually worked out pretty well. I haven't really messed myself up. I got that question on a podcast a while ago. Like, have I messed myself up? Have I done these biohacks and just like completely destroyed myself?
Yeah. What's the worst biohack you ever did?
Yeah. And that was the weird thing. I mean, yeah, I swam in the cold river, if that's a biohack, just to see how long my body could last, and wound up shitting my pants and losing motor function for the day. Like,
so that really happened?
Cold. Damn.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not a biohack. That's more like swimming in cold water. Like, you could say it's a biohack, but it was just, you know, it's called thermogenesis. No, I was swimming in a cold river and being an idiot. And,
someone have to pull you out?
Because I just wanted to see how long it could last, because I heard 19 minutes was what it came out to. I was just on the shore, and I drugged myself onto the shore and sat in my car shivering and shitting my pants. Amazing.
I love you, bro.
How long did you make it?
It's like a random weekend in Ben's life. He's like, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to go fucking try and swim for 20 minutes in the river.
Yeah, embarrassingly, it was well under 15 minutes.
Oh, really?
It was admittedly also a pretty cold river. I mean, we're talking about like jumping through the ice and the snow to go get in the river. So,
oh my God.
So it's cold. But I haven't really had many. Most of the biohacks have worked out pretty well. I mean, even, you know.
Well, you vet them pretty well before you even mess with them.
Well, okay. So one that I did, I wrote a story on this. Have you guys ever used the penis trainers?
Like penis pump?
I mean, of course.
No.
Adam's like, oh, yeah.
It's called, it's called the private gym. And they send me this thing called the private gym.
The private
and
gym.
And it's a full workout routine, and they have the weight. And it's just like that old, you see this in a lot of like multi-orgasmic books or tantric sex books, where one of the exercises that you do is a towel exercise, where you get an erection, you lift the towel up and down, you know, as you contract like the pelvic muscles.
Oh, I've been doing since I was 13.
Doing Kegels, and then eventually you go to a bigger towel, and then you get the towel wet. But this is actually this little magnet.
I'm up to two beach towels, in case you guys are wondering.
It's this little magnet that you wrap around your penis, and it basically is supposed to increase the strength of the muscles. And like my dick would get exhausted. It'd be so exhausted from the training earlier in the day that so it kind of defeated the purpose. But it still made sense. But that made me think of this next thing. I'm going down to Costa Rica to a yoga retreat next week. So I'm down speaking at a yoga retreat, but on the way back, I'm stopping in Florida for this protocol called Gainswave, where they actually do, and they've used this as a treatment for erectile dysfunction in men, but they've also used it as a treatment to improve erectile quality. And the idea is that you blast almost like ultrasound your crotch tissue with sound waves. It's called Gainswave.
It sounds like it feels good.
Stopping in for a while. So yeah, I mean, speak of pseudoscience, I'll come back. I'll report on how it worked for me. If it worked well for me, I'll probably talk to those guys and say, hey, if I want to hook my audience up with this, if they're interested in it, will you give them a discount code? And you know, usually I'll get some kind of a kickback or referral or affiliate income from something like that. But I am never going out and saying this is going to work for everybody to get rid of erectile dysfunction, change your life forever.
Is that typically how that works for you? Is you get a product sent to you or you reach out looking for something you're interested in, you try it out, and then you reach out affiliate-wise and see what...
Right, exactly. So the model in our industry in many cases is that fitness pros or personal trainers or bloggers in any industry, really, you go to affiliate networks like Share a Sale or Commission Junction or ClickBank or any of these websites that exist where people have products that they're going to split revenue with you on for you promoting their product, whatever, their Abercizer or their supplement or their ebook on your website. And you're getting 10%, 20%, 50% kickback. And you go to these networks, you shop for the best deals, you look for the ones that seem to be converting high, you go back to your blog post, you post the blog post that is promoting that product, and you may have never laid hands on it in your life. You might not even know who created it. You might not know where the raw ingredients come from. That's nothing crazy like that. But that's how a traditional affiliate network or affiliate-based business would operate. And there's a dime a dozen websites out there doing just that. My model, if I'm going to partner up with somebody on an affiliate-based relationship, is I'll get a product. I'll try it like what I'm doing with Halo right now, right? Like they wanted to partner with me. They want me to do a blog post and a podcast with them. So I've got this little, you know, it's right under my feet right now, this little TDCS cranial stimulation unit that I've been using for my workouts to actually assess whether or not it does work if I do TDCS for 20 minutes before I do a workout program.
Can you explain that for everybody? Because that's something that's cool and that the Warriors I know just used it this last season.
I'll tell you a funny story. Have you guys ever heard of the Goat Man?
I have not.
No.
This guy named Thomas Thwaites. He's exactly. He's a UK based like a designer. I think he's more like an architectural designer, possibly a mechanical engineer. But he wrote a book called The Goat Man, which you can now find on Amazon. It was just published this month. He created a series of prosthetic limbs that he attached to his body, and he went out to live with goats out in the field to experience what it would be like to be a man goat and to see life through the eyes of an animal. And you can find pictures of him. He's got like this silly looking like helmet on that looks like he borrowed it from a triathlon, like an aero helmet. He's got like prosthetic limbs strapped to his arms, strapped to his legs, and he even created a prosthetic rumen for digesting food. And I don't even know how that works. Like if it actually was connected to his stomach, or if it was like a fake rumen that he just like put things into to see what would come out.
He was like, "I'm all in."
Anyways, though, in addition to that, he used something called TDCS, which is trans direct. It's either trans direct current stimulation or trans direct cranial stimulation. I'm forgetting whether the C is current or cranial, but anyways,
or crazy.
Or crazy. So he did TDCS on his motor cortex, which if you target with specific frequencies, you can influence to cause changes in anything from like motor patterns, use of the arms and legs. And in his case, he wanted to lose the ability to speak the human language. So he shocked himself.
He wanted to lose the ability?
He didn't want to be able to communicate.
You could do that for cheap. You could have Justin punch him in the
shit out of you.
So he shocked his motor cortex to help him become a goat and to lose the ability to speak for several days while he was out living with these goats.
Wow.
It's an example, though, of how our motor cortex can be stimulated. There's another guy named Dr. Samuel Marcor, and he does research in cyclists and athletes, specifically with TDCS, to see what happens when you shock the brain to see if there is a reduction in your rating of perceived exertion or the quality of your workout after you've done something like that. There are other researchers who have looked at your ability to be able to learn fine motor tasks, like using TDCS for 20 minutes prior to working on a two-handed backhand versus a one-handed backhand in tennis, for example. And that's the idea behind this newer unit, this Halo, that the Golden State Warriors were using during basketball
season.
Does
it inhibit that part of the brain that it's stimulating, or does it stimulate
it? It's got three settings on it, okay. And I haven't played around with two of them. One's for right-hand coordination, one's for left-hand coordination. I would imagine those would be something more for pitchers, single-handed athletes, maybe like e-gamers, people who would want to enhance like hand-eye coordination. I haven't yet done any sessions for that. I've done six sessions so far with TDCS for 20 minutes prior to a hard workout. And it does indeed lower your rating of perceived exertion. Like I will crush myself. I was telling you guys this earlier for like an hour and look at my watch and it's been an hour. I feel like it's been like 10, 15 minutes. So the workouts go by extremely fast and everything feels lighter. And as far as skill acquisition, I really haven't made a hardcore attempt to like learn a new skill, but I've thought about putting it on and trying it prior to like playing guitar or ukulele.
So is there a particular setting that you're doing for what you're looking to do versus what someone else is looking to do? Or is it always
there's
it
only
the same?
Three settings on there, like prime me for my major activity, which in most cases would be a workout, scrimmage, game, whatever, or the left-hand thing or the right-hand
thing.
Oh,
I see.
And then you put it on and it's like this really tingly sensation on your scalp. You got to get the little electrodes that come with it wet, these attachments, and then you put it on. You leave it on for 20 minutes as you're warming up. Like you go ride the bike to get the muscles warm. You could put it on during the first round if you're doing a circuit or something like that, and then have your subsequent two rounds, you know, be post TDCS. But it induces a priming effect that lasts about 60 to 80 minutes. So if you've run it for 20 minutes, 60 to 80 minutes, you have like enhanced functioning of the motor cortex.
Wow.
Fascinating.
Yes. Stuff like that is fascinating to me, but it's also worries me a little bit, right? Because because the brain is so
influenced.
It's so complex, and it the early science feels like they're targeting these major areas, and how specific can they be? And you know, one part of the brain might affect memory in a positive way, but if you stimulate the wrong way, then you lose your memory.
Oh yeah, you could. I mean, that's the other thing I'm doing right now. I don't know if we talked about this the last time that we podcasted together, but I went down to LA and did a QEEG brain map to see which areas of my brain were excessively producing beta waves, where I had increased distractibility, decreased attention.
That's when you were flying the spaceship with your brain, right?
Exactly. So I stayed there for several days and learned how to use all their equipment, how to fly the spaceships with my brain. Basically, it's all based on reward cues, right? Like the spaceship stops making sound, the music stops, the exhaust stops coming out of the back of the spaceship when you stray out of the reward zone that you're trying to train. So the neuroscientist down there, he sends me my reward zone for each day. So it might be, you know, 4 to 7 hertz if we're doing like an alpha brainwave frequency training session. And you'll go through these sessions. But the idea is that if you don't know how to use it, to return to what you were saying, Sal, like if I just say like did a 30-minute session where I upregulated beta brainwave function and taught my amygdala how to be super stressed out and how to get rewarded for being super stressed out.
That could be a bad thing.
Yeah, that could be a bad thing. So, yeah, you have to know how to use these tools, and you also have to recognize that you can kind of fuck yourself up if you don't know. I placed the electrodes in properly and passed out for like 4 hours after training session because I was so exhausted from producing fast beta at a way faster rate than I'd normally produce it if I were just, say, you know, talking to somebody or reading a book.
Well, you be careful, man, because you're going, you got sound waves blasting at your balls. You got stuff coming at your brain.
You know what, though?
You got to be careful, man.
It's a fucking blast.
You know what, though?
I have so much fun with this.
And
stuff,
it's another reason why I continue to say that about him. He's the right guy.
Well, he walks the walk.
He's the guy to do that because he's also fully aware of the risk. And that's the problem, I think, with a lot of things out there, too, is the pseudoscience that people will put out, and then everyone just jumps on, and you're like, wait a second, you just because this person said it was good, you haven't even researched it or really figured out how you're supposed to use it. Where I feel like that's one of the things that's great about Ben's podcast, if you're not a listener already. I mean, he's definitely always pushing those limits, but then he also breaks the science down for everybody. I think that's so awesome. So
Should we go to the next question?
Yeah, Michael Vu.
I can't believe you said that about me after I just outsang Benny and the Jets.
I know, dude.
Oh, so good. So Michael Vu wants to know if we have any words and philosophies that we live by and implement daily.
A lot. Have you guys seen Theodore Roosevelt's Man in the Arena?
Come on, man. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time.
I have a coffee mug. I made a coffee
mug. That's the best.
So every morning when I'm drinking my coffee, I look at Theodore Roosevelt's Man in the Arena, which actually returns to what we were just saying, right? Like, who cares if you're like, whatever, you know, in your mom's basement with a neck beard blogging away about fitness. You want to be in the trenches, in the arena. You want to be a gladiator out there getting your hands bloody and dirty. I like that one. But the other very simple one that I go by is I make art every day. Like every day, whether recording something enchanting for people or new or intriguing or writing an article or even, you know, learning a song on the ukulele or whatever, like every single day, create something. Because that's one of the things we can do that a lot of other creatures like can't do so well. Like a beaver can make a dam and, you know, bird can make a nest, but human beings can create a lot of cool shit. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're just working every day and you're not actually creating every day, then you're missing out on a big part of what it means to be a human.
I like that.
But that's my favorite quote also. I probably read that, I'd say, once a month, the Man in the Arena one. And, I mean, the message behind it basically is it's better to be the man in the arena than to be the critic, you know, the one that experiences the successes and the losses. And it's just, it pumps me up. Actually, Roosevelt himself, Teddy Roosevelt, interesting character. I don't know if you've ever read about the guy, but... I mean, he was kind of a sickly child.
Is he the crime fighter at night? Like, I heard some story about that.
He was a skinny, sickly child, always having asthma, and just trained himself and, you know, did judo when he was as a president. He would train every day and, you know, he led the Rough Riders when he was just a tough son of a bitch. I think he was giving a speech at one point, got shot.
Yeah. More hair than Donald Trump on his upper lip.
He looks like he's the one that looks like a walrus, you know, the one they always make the cartoons about. Yeah.
Spectacles.
That's one of my favorite quotes. And I think for me, just the philosophy is I like to remind myself of just how fortunate I am. I think sometimes it's easy when you're a driven individual to get down on yourself if you're not at the goal that you want to be at. You know, it's easy to say, you know, God, whether you're working out or even in business, and God, I want to be over there and I'm not there yet. Why am I not there yet? And so it can make you forget about how awesome right now is. And so I think every single day I try to remind myself of just how great things are right now.
The journey is. It's so similar to what being mindful is, like, so important to me. And it's something that I feel like we always have to work on, especially if you have a, you know, entrepreneurial spirit or that type A personality where you're like, we're always focused on the next thing and we're going and being mindful and being present and learning to enjoy the journey and the struggle too. Like, you know, I used to always say, if life was easy, it would be no fun. Yeah. It really wouldn't be. If life was just easy and handed to everybody, the struggle is part of the fun. The struggle is part of the, and that's really tough to wrap your brain around and actually learn to look at it that way when you're in it, right?
Because your perspective on the struggle too, though, is super important. Because if you wake up and you're like, oh, today is the struggle, today,
and then you bring on the struggle,
today I fight the game,
manifest.
Today maybe I die. No, but if you look at that struggle and you jump out of bed and you click your heels together and, you know, you rub your hands together and say, all right, time to go slay dragons. Yeah. I mean, like, that's a cool way to live life. If you recognize that it's not going to be easy, but you embrace the struggle and you enjoy it and you freaking love to go out and get your hands dirty and fight. Yeah, I agree. And one quick thing that came to mind, by the way, just so it doesn't slip my memory, was when you're talking about mindful, I read a book on the plane ride down here called The Distracted Mind. Excellent book for anybody out there who wants to work on mindfulness and see how living the way that we live now as humans.
Kind of have a whole new library after hanging out with you, dude.
Destroying our mindfulness. Yeah, The Distracted Mind. I think it's pretty new.
Do you know who it is or no?
No, but I mean, it'll pop up in Amazon. Mm.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, I would echo all those things, but then I also, like, I'm always seeking better ways to improve and create that balance. So I'm always like assessing where I may be somewhat dropping the ball. And so every day is like a new focus that I could sort of prepare myself for to make a little micro improvement as far as like building up the overall experience and balance in my life. So that's something that I'm always like, I'm constantly thinking about. I'm like, you know, there's an area here I could make a little bit of an improvement, and then, you know, and I'm going to revisit something else that, you know, needed attention. But that's always like this constant scale that I'm sort of managing.
You know, it's funny when you talk to very successful people. I've known some very successful people in my life. And when I ask them about how they became successful, or what it was like building their business, or what it was like, you know, doing what they, you know, working towards their success, they always refer to those times. I almost get a sense that they're nostalgic. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, those were the good old days, yeah. Man. We were grinding, and you know, I had only, you know, $1,000 to my name, and I took that and we built this business from nothing, and we did this and that. I had this small office with this real small team, and you hear what's coming out of their mouth, but you feel the energy, and it's almost like they're thinking back to the good times. But yeah, what sucks,
but you
a
know,
lot-
deep down inside, if you send them back in time, they'd be like, oh, the hell, like, get me out of here right here. Now. Yeah. Get me out of here. Where's my Porsche?
Well, that's what I mean.
You can't go back to that.
But that's what I mean. When you're in it, you're so like, ah, but then when you leave it, you're like, God, that's what it's all about. I mean, yeah, I could go to the store right now and buy myself a trophy, and it won't mean a goddamn thing to me. But
I have another philosophy I feel like I kind of live by too, piggybacking off of that is, you know, once you've been through that grind and you've reached and you've been successful, and we kind of talked a little off air with Ben about this, about like, you know, education and money, like it's just, you don't even pay attention to that because it's to you, it's invaluable to like be able to do those experiences. I also think the same thing goes for like once you reach this point in your life, like my focus has changed a lot, and like now the growing aspect and learning becomes so important to me above other things, and then also to give to others. Like I think that I didn't care as much about that in the past. I've always been a very selfish individual, and I know that stems from being a coming up poor and stuff and not having a lot of things, so it made me want a lot of things, and that drove and motivated me. But you know, later on, like now it's like, now I want to give back. Like one of the things that really gives me a lot of joy in life is, and it doesn't always have to be monetary, or it doesn't have to be something that's tangible. Even it's just, you know, if I can leave every day where I've impacted somebody's life in a positive way, mm-hmm. that they'll be like, man, I like that guy, or man, I can't believe he took the time to help me with that or do that. Like to me, like, If I go in each day, like I'm gonna help somebody today, or I'm gonna do something for something today, and sometimes it's grand, and sometimes it's unbelievably rewarding to where almost brings tears to your eyes, and then other times it's just simple as like, hey, you know, help someone open a door today or something. But having that mentality of going in every day that it's not about you, it's a, you know, about how you can impact others, is definitely something that I think I've evolved into as I've gotten older.
Mm. All right, so the last question is from Garrett Gratchling. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. Mm.
It's a beautiful name.
It is.
I would say Graeschling.
Graeschling.
Or you could pronounce it like it's German.
I think it's actually A-E. I think is what it is. Graeling.
Yeah. Oh, is it Graeling?
Yeah, I think it's A-E.
Oh, my bad. That looked like a C. Who wrote that?
Adam. I did.
Yeah. So the question is motivation. Adam. Motivation, where does it come from? How to deal with the effects of failure on motivation? Having the right mindset.
That's so comes from your gut.
You just learn. You don't have to motivate. You just need to shock your head when you're motivated. That's it.
Blast some sound waves at your balls.
Yeah.
I think this is probably the most common. Honest to God, guys, if we were to analyze all of our Q&A questions, one of the more common questions we get is this right here. How do I stay motivated? Mm-hmm. That's such a hard thing for people to deal with, especially when it comes to exercise and activity. I think.
Don't you think we were literally talking about this with what we just said? I think is embracing the struggle.
I disagree.
Oh, really?
I think that you have to embrace the struggle, but from myself and for any clients I've trained, everybody who has fallen off the bandwagon, who has gone through a period of time where they weren't motivated, have gone through a period of time where they didn't have that resistance to say whatever, you know, intermittent fast or avoid the sweet potato fries in excess, or, you know, whatever someone's failure was, where they feel like they derailed themselves and they somehow have to climb back onto the wagon now. It always stemmed from there not being a source of some kind of embarrassment, extrinsic motivation, or event that person had signed up for. whether that event was a 5K or a 10K or a triathlon or a fitness competition or a weight loss competition or photos that they had to post publicly, anything like that. That's why I have enjoyed most the work I've done with folks like triathletes and marathoners and adventure racers and cyclists and people who have a freaking event on the calendar. Right, 3 months down the line, you know you're going to be towing the starting line of XYZ event. You have no choice but to get out of bed and be ready, or else you're going to be freaking embarrassed because, oh, by the way, everybody knows based on your Facebook calendar or whatever that you've actually signed up for that and committed to being there.
Now that it is a very powerful motivator, but I'm going to differ with you a little bit because when you have a particular – when your motivation is, I have an event I have to train for, I have this – race or whatever, when the race is over, and there's a, I can't remember the term, but there's actually a psychological
event remorse.
There is
term for it. When you're over that, and I've been there, I've done that where I've competed and I was
the post-race blues.
It's like, okay, now what? And you lose
need
it.
That in order to get
and
yourself
so then
in
you
shape.
Get then you get these people who are, you know, these soccer moms and these business guys in their 40s who sign up for marathon after marathon after marathon and race
and
after
they
race.
Stand in line the morning after an Ironman with a $1,000 check to sign up for the next Ironman.
Yeah, and they do it because that's how they keep their motivation, and then a lot of times they hurt themselves, they overtrain, they beat themselves up. I think the important thing, and this has to do with really your, and we talk about this all the time on the show, your relationship to exercise and activity and your relationship to food. If your motivation is performance or the way you look or something you don't like about yourself, that will motivate you to a certain point. But then it will get, you will find yourself in a situation where, let's say your motivation is that you don't like something about yourself. Well, eventually you're going to get angry with that and say, you know what? Fuck it. I love myself. It doesn't matter what I look like, and I'm just going to do whatever I want. And you
because
lose your
you've
motivation.
Connected the two of those.
You've connected your body image to your self image, and that is not a long term solution. When the person connects to exercise and food because they care about themselves, they love their bodies, they love the way they feel. It comes from a good place of security and good self image. Don't worry, body image. Remember, that's separate, but a good self image. Then the motivation is different because you find that you want to do it. Because I'll tell you something right now, if you don't want to do something, you're only going to motivate yourself so long, and fitness is lifelong.
Well, if I put a clarifier on what I was saying, I do not think it's a healthy idea to paint yourself into the corner of being like that 50-year-old man who's done 50 Ironman triathlons, or the person who's a marathoner and all they know is chronic repetitive motion running because that's all they've done their whole lives. What I believe in, though, is this concept of you retire and then you die, right? Like these people who retire and give up their jobs and don't have anything to live for anymore and aren't learning new skills or new activities, they die
earlier.
I was just over in Finland last week with a guy who's one of the fittest old dudes I've ever hung out with, one of the most motivating, inspiring, dynamic people I've ever met. He's right now in the process of, so he's sleeping with a helmet on so that he can invent some kind of a new pillow that reduces pressure on his cranial artery while he's asleep in bed so he doesn't cut off blood flow.
So it's like
a
pressure helmet or whatever sensor.
He's riding horses, but he's also taking the saddles that he's using when he's riding the horses. He's making chairs out of these saddles to allow the pelvic bones to be split properly. The guy doesn't have an extensive knowledge of anatomy, but he's just figuring this stuff out for himself. He's swinging a kettlebell. He's doing sauna every day. He's learning how to play guitar. He's constantly on this quest to do new things. And that dude, I guarantee, wakes up out of bed every single morning motivated to go get shit done. So I don't think that you necessarily have to have whatever event that you've signed up for to motivate yourself to do what it is that you want to do be the same event over and over again. But you know, for me personally, right, like it's not always an Ironman, right? Like it's an adventure race, or it's a hunt, or it's a hike,
or
someone
it's rowing, you know, learning to row the paddleboard up and down the Spokane River.
Right.
Well, the trainer, I challenge the trainer in you to ask yourself though, what do we come across as trainers as the majority of our clientele? Like that guy sounds like he has a good relationship, and it sounds like you have a very good relationship, which I'm certain you do. With health and fitness and that pursuit. I feel that most of the people, though, that we know that are doing those marathons and doing those things, they don't have a good relationship. I would say a majority. And like, obviously, yeah. And that's totally anecdotal. Like, I'm just saying, in my experience of clients, you know, normally the people that are signing up for those marathons and those challenges, they have connected that with the best shape of their life. And so they feel that it's necessary for them to constantly be doing these races, you know, to in order to do that. And without that, because they've never experienced health and fitness and feeling good, whether it be a physical thing or aesthetic thing or whatever accomplishment, they've never felt that without signing up for these races or without, you know, constantly having to challenge themselves that way. So, you know, you have a very neat way of an approach. And it sounds like this guy you're talking about too does. I think that the majority of people, though, struggle with this. They struggle with understanding that relationship
You have to consider, like, the four of us on the podcast right now, we're all driven individuals. We get off on competition. It's something we enjoy. We have a passion for challenge. We have a passion for exercise. Most people don't necessarily have those. And so I think when people connect the dots differently, and what they should do is connect the dots and say, I love the way this makes me feel. This feels good for my. This is me enjoying life. Then you'll find people become more active naturally. It's interesting when people work on things like sadness and they find the root cause of some of their depression. They become happier. They naturally go and move. They naturally go out and exercise. Mm-hmm. And so most people are not going to be.
It's just like addressing posture first.
Yeah,
you notice a dramatic change in the way that people behave. You know, in their depression. And all these things changes based off of just holding and carrying yourself a specific way.
Right. Yeah. I'm doing a power pose right now.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the Y pose.
Yeah, so I think you know, if we can change the way people connect themselves to exercise and nutrition, you'll find more people simply wanting to move more. And that's the thing. It's your body wants to do these things. It's us that tells our body not to. And it all starts with our connection to ourself and our relationship.
Well, so basically, Garrett, what Sal is saying is redefine your relationship with your body. What I'm saying is sign up for a bikini competition.
You know, to elaborate on what I meant by, you know, embracing the struggle too, is I think sometimes they beat up themselves when they have setbacks in their fitness journey and their fitness goal, and they allow to connect that as like a failure. Like, you know, maybe because you tried this, ketogenic diet and it didn't work out for you. You didn't fail. You've just learned something new about your body, yeah. Or maybe
it's self-discovery.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's more like that. And that's what I mean by that. Or, you know, you sign up for that race and you learn something about yourself. Like, wow, that really motivated me. I felt good. I felt accomplished. I noticed that my work was better. I noticed that my relationship with my family was better. This is something healthy and
my
good.
My toenails all fell off.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, you start to connect those dots. And let's be honest, in fitness, in the overall journey of health and wellness for all of us, most of it is a struggle. It's not easy. A lot of people struggle with weight loss and feeling good and being able to build muscle and look the way they want to look. Like, so a majority of those out there are having a hard time accomplishing that. And that I always try and let people know that, like, it's not easy. I've been working at this for over 15 years of my life, and I'm still learning and I'm still getting better and, like, figuring out stuff like, oh, wow, like, I would have never thought that worked so well for me. So I think that's what I mean by embracing the struggle is accepting that, you know, it's not necessarily a failure because you tried something or you have incorporated something into your life and it didn't give you, you know, these quick results to look a certain way. And that's what I mean by, you know, embracing that and then also working on that relationship side.
You know, Ben, I want to you talked about using the saunas in Finland. I know that's that culture is huge on that. What's that like over there?
Oh, dude. So they've got these big traditional Finnish sauna houses that you'll go to. So the first night that I got there, and anytime I travel internationally, I like to find some kind of a bathhouse because I'm gay.
Somebody here got excited.
So a Turkish bath or a Russian bath or a Japanese bath or a Finnish bath. If you can find some kind of a cold hot contrast therapy that you can do for, you know, the increase in in heat shock proteins and brain-derived neurotrophic factor and endothelial nitric oxide synthase and activation of the FOXO gene, which is basically like a longevity-based gene. There's all these different beneficial effects that occur when you're engaged in hot-cold contrast, and especially like the blood and lymph flow part of it. When you're jet-lagged, it's enormously helpful. And cold also helps with the tone of your vagus nerve, which is important for innervation of most of the organs in your body. So the idea is that I'll hunt down a, you know, some kind of way that I can do like 15 minutes heat, 5 minutes cold three times through for like an hour long post jet lag type of session. In Finland, there are 20,000 saunas, meaning everywhere that you go, everybody has a sauna in their basement, like a nice sauna, like one of those dry, nice saunas with the cool rocks in it that you splash the water and the essential oils in so it smells like eucalyptus or whatever. But like, and you got like the cedar, I don't know if it's cedar or oak or what kind of wood that they use in those, but they just smell amazing. And you walk into the saunas in Finland, and not only do they have these big traditional saunas that are enormous, vast rooms, as large as this room we're in right now, these big cavernous saunas that stay hot because the fires are so freaking huge, but most of them are next to like the Baltic Sea or these icy cold bodies of water like lakes and rivers. And so you'll stay in the sauna and sweat and sweat and sweat and then just go plunge into the icy cold frigid wilderness and come back into the sauna.
You do that back and forth.
And they have like birch barks that you whip each other with and like special like oils that you wash each other down with. It's all co-ed, which is really weird for me at first. Was you'd walk into the sauna and just be a bunch of guys and girls nude whipping each other with branches. And,
you know, sounds awesome.
But wait a minute, legit, everybody's completely naked. Yeah, nobody covers themselves.
Yeah, everybody's completely naked. I've gone a few times with Americans who have put on big towels just to. Because Americans have this idea that any nakedness is automatically sexually related. But there's the interesting thing is in Finland, there can't be talk of business when you're in the sauna. There is no sexual activity in a sauna. All it is just relaxation and being like an 8-year-old kid in there, just big smile on your face, hanging out, soaking in the amazing feeling that your body has with the heat and the cold. And I did it every day for 2 or 3 hours every day. I was in the sauna, back and forth from the sauna to the ice in Finland, and left Finland just feeling friggin' amazing.
You know, since when we met with you last, when was it when we were up?
You impacted all of us. All of us have been doing it.
So I've been doing steam, very, very hot steam, and then I'll do just a freezing cold shower. So nothing like what you're talking about. But I have noticed significant effects. The first thing I noticed was my tolerance for hot and cold got much better. So obviously something in my body's adapting to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's some kind of a stress adaptation, right? But I noticed my skin felt better. I felt like I'm recovering better, sleeping better. And at first I was like, okay, this has got to be I wonder if this is a placebo or if this is legit. And then I would go for, you know, 4 or 5 days without doing it, and I could definitely tell a difference.
We didn't even scratch the surface. Like the growth hormone release, the increase in the ability to maintain muscle in the absence of actual loading or strength training.
So it's good if you you hurt your knee and you can't work out.
Right.
Do that.
Exactly. Are you familiar with Dr. Rhonda Patrick?
Yeah. She talks about it all the time, right?
Yeah. So I was over in Finland with her, which was really interesting because I was doing a lot of the saunas with her, and she's a big sauna researcher. And she actually, when we were over there, interviewed the head researcher in Finland. She went to his university and interviewed him for her Found My Fitness podcast about the research in Finland that shows that the direct correlation between longevity and saunas in Finland is that the folks who are going to the sauna 4 to 5 times a week are living a crazy significant number of years longer than the folks who aren't. And yeah, maybe part of it is like the social experience in the sauna. Maybe part of it is you're that person who has that 2 to 3 hours to go visit the sauna, whatever. But there's something going on there.
No, I think that from a personal experience, I definitely notice a difference when I do. And it's interesting when you find techniques like that seem to be embedded in multiple cultures, especially when it's parts of religions and parts of health practices, like hot and cold contrast. That's a part of most major cultures going back thousands
of
years.
Like you go to Japan, it's in the malls. That's something I learned very – actually, I took my wife to a Japanese mall when I was over there racing a triathlon, and we went into the sauna in the mall. And theirs aren't co-ed. There's like one for women, one for men. But they got like in the airport, they have like a sauna with these amazing like cold baths and hot tubs and warm soaking pools and hot soaking pools and saunas and steam rooms. Her major takeaway was that Japanese women don't shave anywhere, ever. That was her. She's like, they have such big bush over here. She's like, it's crazy. Any other comments on the sauna experience? No, just bush, that bush everywhere.
It's like a tarantula. Yeah. It's coming after
That's
me.
That's Adam's favorite.
No, yeah. So since we hung out with you too, I mean, two big things were takeaways for me that it was, you know, it's almost like a duh too. And like listening to you talk about it, I'm like, God, you know, I need to practice that more. One of the big ones was walking around barefoot more and getting connected. Like, and right now, like I was currently going through some work with our Cairo, Dr. Brink, who we do work with, who's just a brilliant mind and has like broken me down, like with all my poor connections I have. And, you know, I have a really poor connection with my feet and my toes. Like I found it very fascinating that I can't even get them all to move the same on both sides and everything. I thought, wow, that's like, so
you need to do more TDCS. Yes. That's your problem.
So,
yeah.
The goat man. So I've been doing that. And then the cold showers, the freezing cold showers in the morning. I mean, and I notice like nothing gets me. I mean, that it trumps the coffee. I mean, nothing gets me like wired and wide awake going after that. Freezing cold shower.
You guys saw me in my Jesus sandals right here in the restaurant last night. And so these are when you can't go barefoot because it's socially inacceptable. These have, speaking of
you can walk on water in those
speaking
things?
Of Zach's earlier question about pseudoscience, actually grounding and earthing has a lot of very interesting science behind it based on the natural very low frequency magnetic field that the earth produces. It's 7-something hertz, like extremely low. I mean, it's a pulsed magnetic field similar to what a cell phone emits, but at a much much lower power than a cell phone. And this actually produces an electrical charge that you absorb when you're standing on Earth. It's the concept of earthing or grounding, where you talk about walking barefoot. It's good for jet lag. It's good for normalizing your electrical balance after you've been out with appliances and Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and wireless. It's why you feel so great after you've been camping, you know, among a host of other reasons. But these shoes have copper built into the laces and these copper plugs in the bottom of them. So even though my foot isn't touching the ground, it's still conducting the negative ions from the ground up into my foot.
Mm.
And they're patterned after the Tarahumara Indian tribe from that book Born to Run.
Mm-hmm.
So they're technically like barefoot running sandals, but I wear them when I'm traveling because they have the copper plugs in them, and also they're really super sexy.
So besides being
as you can see,
because that's what I was to say.
Basically,
they go great with skinny.
They're like I tore a strip off my tire and put some laces on it and grabbed it to my foot.
They go great with skinny jeans.
Yeah,
yeah. You got the new ones on that didn't explode in the back.
I've got one pair of skinny jeans left now. Yeah,
dude, that was hilarious.
You're like the Hulk.
Yeah, you like just break through. Yeah.
I am known for having some pretty powerful hip extensors. Yeah, no, I wore my stretchy skinny jeans, and last night in the restaurant, I stood up and started talking about how skinny jeans that stretch are so good for workouts and squats. And I turn around, and lo and behold, there's a giant rip. Kyle Kingsbury,
was it Kyle who noticed it?
Yeah, there's a photo on his Instagram.
Oh, I saw it.
Of just the hole in my pants. I don't remember his Instagram handle. But yeah, I stood up and my stretchy jeans ripped.
That was great, man. Yeah.
Good times. Listen, if you like listening to Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you'll get a free Mind Pump t-shirt. You can also check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal, Adam at Mind Pump Adam, and Justin at Mind Pump Justin.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.